Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
I called my son and just left a message about the fact that I'd lost a glove. A relatively upbeat conversation for me that I'd lost a glove. Because I think I said in the voicemail, Michael, I can buy another pair of gloves.
Yeah, you conceded that you can get another pair. Yeah. And
but
that you have
but
others
it's cold
at home.
Out. But I have it's others cold at home. But it's cold. It was a very zen monologue on the loss of a glove.
It was boring. Very zen. It was very NPR sounding. Like
yeah.
A little soliloquy.
Kind of a Garrison
Saturday
Keillor
at 2 in the afternoon on NPR.
This is General George Washington, and you're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
All righty then, plausibly live from an undisclosed third-floor location in Chevy Chase, Maryland. We are on the air with Chris Saliza and Gary Braun and Michael Kornheiser, and Nigel's going to run the board and do the news. Michael Wilbon will join us in a little bit. We're going to open the show. The first two segments are going to be about the NCAAs. If I'm surprised about any one thing, I'm surprised about Duke. The board was open for Duke once Villanova went down. And I'm not surprised by Villanova because the exception to the rule with Villanova is last year. And in fact, watching that game, watching the Villanova game, everybody is going to have different troubles with all the officiating in all of the games. In the Villanova game, if you went inside, they let you take five steps, but they didn't call any fouls. You know, that was a great game. The Villanova game was a great game. Villanova lost. At that point, the entire board is open to Duke because you don't think for a second, even though South Carolina is playing a home game because they're playing inside the state, they're playing in Greenville, you don't think they're going to beat them.
You understand that game would have been in North Carolina if it weren't for the bathroom
that's right.
law.
Yep. That's
yeah,
right.
Would have been
right.
more of a home game.
So
and
plus, you know, I watched the first half. I'm very comfortable feeling I thought that Duke was going to win that game. So that's the big upset to me. Louisville goes down. That's a second. Two twos are out. Villanova is a one that went down. Kentucky, in what might have been the best game, Kentucky-Wichita State.
Great game.
A two almost went out. Wichita State at the end could not get shots. Could not get the shot off.
They blocked two shots.
You know,
Kentucky
this,
did.
You,
yeah.
you watch this happen. Carolina barely wins. Oregon, the same thing happens to Rhode Island that happened to Wichita State. Mm-hmm. They cannot yep. get a shot at the end after Oregon makes a great shot. Dylan Brooks, I think, makes the shot.
He scored 27.
You know, so
it was Ennis, Tyler Ennis.
Is that who did it?
Yes.
Okay.
The kid with the little blonde patch in his hair. He made like five or
Schreuer.
Six threes.
We just call him Schreuer.
The Schreuer, yeah.
That's
not
what
a kid
him.
Either. He's like 40.
Yeah,
I think.
He's
that,
older.
Right.
The larger headline, of course, is the ACC goes down, and they go down. They got one team in, North Carolina, which almost lost.
They were down five with
talk about
under 3 minutes
gamut.
Left.
I'm one of those people that said all year the ACC is the best conference in the country and they should get 10 teams in. They got one left.
If you watched the left. Beginning of that North Carolina game, they jumped out to a 30-13 lead. And the first 5-10 minutes of that game, I thought, who in this tournament is going to beat them?
But then at halftime, they're only up
right.
five.
Right,
they're
and they were down. They were down a significant chunk of the second
well,
half of the second half.
65-60 before they went on that 12-0 to close the game out.
They looked like they were going to lose. I mean, you're depending on a 12-0 run in the last 3 minutes of the game. That doesn't happen all that often.
Here's what I would say about the first weekend of the tournament. It is unlike most first weekends of the tournament. There are not 13s and 14s and 12s winning in the way that they used to win. Even the 10-7s didn't win in the way they used to win. Mostly there was chalk out there. And now you get to the point in the second week of the tournament where we get to all the time, which is everybody is a big boy. You're going to say, oh, Gonzaga. Stop. Don't tell me Gonzaga is not a major basketball school because it's been a number one seed five times. It just doesn't get to the Final Four because it is crippled by the teams that it plays in its own conference for 2 months. But it is a major basketball school. You're going to say Xavier? What? It's a Big East basketball school. Xavier, Butler, Gonzaga, two Big East teams. What you have, the most surprising thing to me is three SEC teams.
Yep.
Because I think the SEC is terrible.
You were loud wrong on that, I think.
I'm totally wrong on that. Three Pac-12 teams in, and those are the teams that you thought were good. Three Big 12.
Well,
three
Oregon,
SEC.
I think most people thought Oregon would be more hit by the injury to Chris Boucher, but it hasn't seemed to affect them.
Yeah, and well,
other
I think they should have lost, but they didn't lose.
Yeah.
Dana
Rhode
Altman
Island
is
would
their
have
coach.
Been.
Is their coach is quite. I watched that game. Their coach really helped them in that game. He used to be at Creighton. Dana Altman. He's very good. That's a game crazy. That you very much could have lost. They were behind virtually that entire game.
By the way,
they come back in the last 8-ish minutes. Now the kid makes a bunch of threes. Obviously, you can't coach that. But they did it. He did a really nice job.
The ACC fold thing, just sort of how they felt was weird. I mean, Duke giving up 65 points in the second half, most they've ever given up in a half under Krzyzewski. The Louisville, similar situation, up at the half, gagged it. Florida State, a total laydown against Xavier. I mean, it was just...
UVA.
UVA
scored 39 points.
High school girls
score. 39 points. They cannot score. We talked about this a million times.
It wasn't just that they lost, because you know conferences get a lot of teams in. They're going to lose a lot of teams. But not competitive.
Top
10 games.
Team. Michael, you watched the Duke game with a Dookie.
Oh, I did watch with a Dookie. It was a tough night for us as we were getting ready for bed. You looked at what South Carolina did early with that full court press, taking advantage of their size. And you thought that eventually the fouls would catch up to them. And in the second half, it just went the other way. And Duke was off balance trying to take these quick threes to try and get back in the game, but it was just always out of hand 10 minutes or with 10 minutes to go.
The officiating is uniformly bad, but not in the same way all the time.
Mm-hmm. Keep you
guessing. For example, the Michigan game and Michigan. A lot of people felt that Michigan, they were spent because of playing four games in four nights and winning them all, and in fact, they're not. But they had the kid, Wagner, the German kid. He makes this great steal at half court with his left hand, and he gets whistled for a foul. Yeah. There were touch fouls way off the rim that you said, wow, what are they calling here? And then underneath, they were letting people play, which I'm okay with.
There was a play, and obviously I was rooting for Rhode Island because, you know, us small northeastern states have to stay together. And as we've detailed, I have nothing else because of Georgetown. There's a play in that game. There's about 3 minutes left. It's either tied or Rhode Island is down one. The left-handed Rhode Island kid, their best player, he is a little bit out of control. He comes down
that's
the
kid
left,
had like 21 points in the second half.
He comes down on the wing, and he runs into Brooks. They call a charge. That charge, I know I'm beating a horse that's been beaten with hands, but that call is so maddening because basically the Rhode Island kid does everything he can in the air to avoid Dylan Brooks. Dylan Brooks moves into him, gets hit in the right shoulder, so the rest of his body's not hit, falls over, and it's a charge. And the game is fundamentally altered now by that refereeing. Like, either call nothing. But it's not a charge. I mean, it's just maddening. I know this is the, like, refrain against Duke always. Like, Shane Battier falls over. But it's just so frustrating because if you watch it for 2 seconds, it's obvious. Well, he nicks him.
Duke, they got some bad
calls.
I must say, I didn't have an issue with this. It's a long time Maryland fan. It was interesting to see it go this way. But Duke got worked a little bit.
Kennard foul. The last foul on Kennard was ridiculous. So the guy crashed into him.
So did you watch, did you do what I did and you start going from True TV to TV and all of that? I'm going to...
They do a great job of timing these things out. So, like, you can see the end of the, you know, you see the end of the game, you switch it, you're done.
I have one
test.
Except for the early afternoon hole where there's no game for about 45 minutes.
Because they're only on CBS in the early
afternoon. This is my thing that is very frustrating. And some of it's because I have young kids who are now into the bracket and want to watch. But there's a noon game on Sunday. There's a 2:40. Those are the only games. Then there's like two games at 6:40. A game at 8:40.
Yeah, I thought Sunday went later than it should have.
9:40. I mean, the UCLA game. I want to watch that because I want to watch Lonzo Ball. The game tipped at like 9:55 on a Sunday night. Like, why can't we play two games in the early after? I guess it's because it's CBS. It's all TV, but it's just very frustrating.
So I'm going to make two observations because I watched a lot of people and I watched a lot of sit-arounds. Two people who I thought were great on TV. Wally Zerbiak
was great on TV.
He's the closest thing to Doug Collins I've ever seen at analyzing exactly what happened in the flow of the game. I mean, he's the halftime guy.
He can wear the hell out of a three-piece
suit.
He's
really good. And Jimmy Patsos was great.
Was he good?
Jimmy Patsos was great. And he was in the secondary
show.
That
can't surprise you. I mean,
no, he was great. He was in the secondary show, like on True TV.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Anyway, so let me give the standings. It's Nigel is ahead.
No reason to go through.
Nigel's number one.
Going for back to back.
I'm sorry, could we say that again?
Nigel's number one, and he's got Carolina winning. McManus
just
is two.
Isolate that
but
audio.
She's got Nova winning.
So she has no
she's
chance.
Done.
She's done. Spike Braun is tied with Brian Polian in third place. Spike has Kentucky winning. They're alive. Brian Polian has Arizona.
Although Brian Polian, I know this because Brian and I were going back and forth on Twitter a little bit, and he and Spike have a sort of a little competition going. Spike told me Brian should
Spike's
stick to
10.
Football after Louisville went out because Brian had Louisville in the Final Four. Ooh. So it's going to be hard for him to make points, but he's still got a chance.
I think that's
Louisville.
Yeah, yeah, I think you're right.
Wilbon is tied with Reginald the Monkey.
How about that?
In fifth place. Gary is in 12th place. He's tied with Leon Harris and Pablo Torre and Luke Russert.
All losers.
And Andy Poley. And Gary has Kansas winning, so he's alive. I'm in 13th spot.
Lucky 13.
I'm tied with Torre.
Get to the end. I want to know
well,
where
no
Liz
reason
is.
To, no reason to.
Chris is in 18th. Chris is in 18th.
Oh, tied he made with, a comeback.
Tied with Michael, but Chris has Arizona and Michael had Duke.
I think I should get a 50-point bonus for putting this bracket together.
Totally agree.
And I would like to say there's a good chance I made some mistakes along the way in typing in all these picks.
I think they gave you the 50, and that's how you got up to 19th.
Pat 40, who had to endure Greg Marshall's
Holy cow.
In the Wichita State game, that's the best game I saw. That was even better than the Villanova game. Pat 40 is in 20th, tied with Seth Davis, who's done because he had Duke.
Both of those people do it for a living,
my
folks.
God.
Dr. Prof.
Oh, yes.
Howard.
Well, he has Louisville. I mean, he's Duke.
And he's at 350.
Yeah, he's out.
He's only ahead of Chuck Todd and Phil's mom.
Chuck Todd is below me?
Yes.
Eat it, Todd.
Yeah. And Phil's mom is where she normally is.
But
she has Gonzaga.
She has Gonzaga.
And so she's alive.
Right.
We have other, like, brackets. We have brackets here. The winner, Nigel, has 480 points. Ahead in the littles brackets is Where's My Tie with 570 points.
Nice.
Wow. That's really good. With Michigan winning.
Wow.
Jordan has 560 tied with hashtag sad. And what is this?
Let me see.
I lazy. What is that?
Hashtag failing New York
Times. I lazy tripe hound.
What does that mean?
Just a bunch of words.
Yeah, there you go.
They're at 560, and one has UNC and one has Arizona. And what is something?
Kentucky.
We should have a different set of prizes for those who actually listen to the show versus just people
entering.
Who have added another ESPN.
Right.
Yeah,
so there's over 17,000 in that
group.
Where is
Verluga in ours?
He's down.
Well, when you say down, remember who you're talking to.
Everybody's down to me. So.
Barry's at 16.
Okay, how far away am I from Verluga?
20 points.
That's nothing.
But you're about 100 miles away from pronouncing it correctly.
Yeah. Whatever.
So much just came out of your mouth.
I'm not going to.
Is there anything else we want to say about the first weekend?
No, I mean, it was a great
basketball
weekend.
Tournament.
Yeah.
It's great weekend.
It's just a basketball.
Can I counter it was a great weekend?
Yeah.
I thought it was somewhat boring.
Okay.
Like as a tournament,
I don't disagree.
Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, there were some great games. I thought the Wichita State game was
great
awesome. The Nova Wisconsin game was awesome.
The games were better than average.
Wisconsin, no overtime.
Over
the last 5 years, Wisconsin has provided nothing but great games.
Yeah,
but great games.
It's a system team. The guy knows what they know. They all buy in. They know what they're doing. That Hap kid, as we talked about,
Virginia's
when they played Georgetown, the
system
Hap
team
kid,
too.
Well, you can't score any points.
But they don't score.
I just did not think. Not that the quality was bad.
No,
but
I didn't find it.
What's the biggest storyline I could think of, other than Duke losing, which is always a huge storyline, I guess, because it's Duke, is Michigan.
We've seen.
There's not like a great.
No, that's
story.
The second week of that.
First
this
two
is
games
Michigan.
Were on Thursday were the two best games I saw all weekend. This Princeton is, and yeah. also the
Princeton
UVA.
Notre Dame.
UVA down early though. That game was at least fun to watch.
Yeah, they were getting killed early. Actually,
all the big conferences are represented here.
No, I know it'll be
all of it.
If you care about basketball, the next 2 weeks will be great, and I do, and that's fine. I didn't find it to be compelling watching.
I agree. I thought there was some terrific.
I watched
because you were out of it.
But they weren't.
Like,
you know,
3 minutes into the tournament,
they weren't 14-2
Your words are hurtful.
That's
Brian.
What you want to see. You want to see the 14-2 game. You want the 15-2, 14-3.
Right. You didn't really get that.
All right, so we'll get out of here. We'll stay with the tournament. We'll bring in Michael Wilbon when we return. I am Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Books ad. Have you ever sent flowers online before? It's not a satisfying experience. You're lured in with the $19.99 advertised price, and when you check out, it's $94. What happened? And when the flowers arrive, hey, they're not at all like the picture, and they're almost dead. Those other flower companies are just middlemen jacking up the price you pay. Books.com, B-O-U-Q-S, Books.com offers a better way. Farm-fresh flowers that can last up to 2 weeks, high quality and seriously beautiful. Additionally, they provide fully transparent prices, no endless upsells and free delivery. Tuesday through Friday when you register, oh, it is free delivery. It's not, there's no endless upsells, and you do get free delivery. This copy is worded in such a way that I read it badly. My fault. Free delivery Tuesday through Friday when you register at Books.com. Plus, the site, unlike every other flower site, is beautiful and modern. Check out Books.com, B-O-U-Q-S.com. You'll see what we mean. There's a special offer here for my listeners. You get 20% off your order at Books.com, B-O-U-Q-S.com. Use the code Tony for 20% off. This is a very long ad that they want me to read. I think I've read the best part of the ad.
I think you have.
And I think I've done very well. I would just tell you that flowers are always nice.
Yes.
It's time of year.
I've used Books.
Flowers are nice.
I've used Books.
We can say that their customer service is very responsive when any yes. of our listeners have had issues with their flowers, so we thank them
so
for
that. So that's good. So we can recommend them.
Yes.
And
yes.
we do.
Indeed. Wholeheartedly.
Indeed we do. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is sent to us by Devin Heritage. The name of the band is The Cause. The name of the song is That's Right. Big time garage rock and roll early in the morning, which is always good to hear. Michael Wilbon is in Arizona. He's going to be on PTI today and then go on vacation for a while, richly deserved. And I hope he feels the same way about me when I go on vacation, richly deserved. We didn't talk much in the open to the show today about Northwestern. I will say this. I'm inclined towards significant feelings towards Northwestern because of Mike and other people I know, but mostly because of Mike. Northwestern was involved in two of the greatest games of the whole tournament so far. Northwestern won the first game against Vanderbilt when the single worst foul I have ever seen occurred. A kid just didn't understand score and time. He just did not get it, and lost the second game when their young coach, Chris Collins, did something you can't do. Even though he was right, you can't do it. You can't run on the court. I don't know how you get the ref's attention, and I don't know why that isn't reviewable, because Chris Collins was 100% right. But in that swing, that's a four-point swing, and they lose the game. Northwestern could have beaten Gonzaga. I've just laid out the very bare bones. Why don't you tell us what your weekend was like as you watched one in person and watched the other on TV?
Well, Tony, you know, we were in a place where a school that, you know, plays in the Big Ten, plays in a power conference, has been to bowl games, is, you know, ranked in all these things that come out, you know, U.S. News and World as Northwestern as a, you know, top 12 school in America. But we've never had any kind of basketball success, not even approaching basketball success, even though we've had, like, you know, Tex Winter, and there's some certain elements of things we've had, but we've never had any. And so to finally be in the tournament and to be out there, we had like, I don't know, maybe close to 10,000 people who bought tickets and came to Salt Lake City.
That's great. That's great.
And so for those of us who care about this stuff, it was, you know, we call it one of the great weekends of our lives. It was a great week that could have been otherworldly.
Oh, yeah, if you beat Gonzaga.
If we catch Gonzaga, actually catch him. But So it's a staggering thing. People from everywhere just showed up at these two games, and we had a great time. And you know, you're trying to build something. It's a little bit different than if you're trying to protect something like Kentucky or UCLA. We're not. Our goals can't be the same as their goals yet. Not even like Maryland or Virginia. Different. We had never been to the tournament. Never been. And we walked down the street one day, and somebody teasingly said, "What are you guys going to do now, right after the win, right after we beat Vanderbilt?" And Don, and we're in Salt Lake City, and people are happy for us, and they're cheering, and they're saying, "Go Cats." And my brother says, we have no idea. We've never been here before. Yeah. We don't know what we're doing next. And it was just that permeated the weekend. Well, then you get this game, you get this situation where there's a goaltend that has to be called. And
it is
New York Times had a great photo.
It's a goaltend. His hand's through the rim.
The kid's hand is through the rim, and it's holding on to the rim. And that's going to make it 63-60 with 4:54 to play.
That's right.
That's a get.
And all the momentum is with Northwestern at this point. All of it.
And all of the pressure, more pressure than anybody, is being felt by Gonzaga. Because you know what the conversation is about.
They never win. They never get to the final.
They never win. They only get out the first weekend sometimes. And this is what I was hoping for. Close, late momentum. That's what you did. If you're 8 or 9, and you're playing the 1, that's what you're hoping for. Well, the call isn't made. And when I say that the goals have to be a little bit different, and I talked to some people about this, Chris Collins is building something. He and his staff and his players are saying, okay, we are here now. And we're not a doormat. We're not a homecoming opponent. We're not a welcome mat. We are here to swing back and punch you back in the face when you hit us. And Chris Collins had to protect his team. He had to protect the program that he is seeding. Had to. I know the 2 free throws and the possession were killers.
They were.
Because we went from down 3, which is what it should have been.
To down 7.
To down 7.
Yeah.
I know that. But, Tony, again, human reaction, as Chris said, it's a human reaction. It's the same reaction we all had. The reaction is, whoa, 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 whoa. You got to call that. You dopes in the striped shirts have to see that. If you don't see that, there's no reason for you to officiate the game. Let's just go shirts and skins and make our own calls. And the tournament's been badly officiated, not just for my school. The term has been badly officiated, embarrassingly officiated. I don't know why that is, but it is. And so we don't have the momentum anymore. The game goes from 3-7, and we lose the game. I have never been prouder of my coach and team. And you have to at some point, again, when you're – I know this, Tony, being a – we're a bottom feeder. Or at least thought of that way by everybody else. A cuddly little loser. We're the Cubs. At some point, you have to stand up and hit somebody in the mouth back, even if you get penalized for it, even if the teacher says you got to go to the principal's office now. And Chris Collins, I think, for the building of the program, not for the result of the game, I applaud him.
Yeah, I just think you can't go on the court, and I think he knows that.
But you can. You have to make a point. You have to make a stand. You do. You can't. You can't let them in at that point, Tony. What are you doing? What are the officials doing?
You yell and you agitate and you go crazy.
But they don't stop,
and
they don't stop
right.
the game.
You call an illegal timeout if you have to get the player
timeout.
Over.
Maybe you call timeout.
Yeah.
Maybe you step out there. I don't know if he might have been screaming timeout. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't
that
know.
Game I was watching on television, I wasn't there. I was behind the bench for the first game. So anyway, is it a mistake in terms of the game time and score to come on the court? Of course it is. What's the bigger issue here for us? And that's a subjective question.
What I found interesting, I'll go back to the Vanderbilt game later, but I'm going to stay with the Northwestern Gonzaga game, is that you were getting killed in the first half. Not only were shots not dropping, anything that went inside was being rejected. I mean, you were being smothered. The fact that you came back at all, and the fact that you methodically came back and were in position to win the game, to me, is greater than anything else the program has ever done.
I'm not going to disagree with that. And look, our kids have to get, again, when you're playing in this thing for the first time, it's like, what do you call on? You don't have anything to call on. You're playing a number one seed. Now, Northwestern's played games against, we beat Magic Johnson and Michigan State, 40 years ago on their way to a national championship. So, yes, the program has played in big games. But that was a regular season game at home. You're playing a number one seed, a team that, again, feels all the pressure and came out trying to do what Gonzaga should do.
They were great.
Stomp, put their foot on our necks.
Absolutely.
And say, let's get these little gnats, these people who've never been here, let's get them off of us now. They came out and played like they should, and we responded like you hope your team does. And yeah, I think it is, and I just hope that, I hope that the recruits who are watching, some of whom are big time kids who
they're going to love Northwestern.
Considered Northwestern, more strongly consider us the tune of yes right
look
now.
Look at the crowd shots. Look at the crowd shots. And I mean, everybody in America hated the little kid who I know is the AD's son, and you hate the director for pulling that shot all the time. But everybody else, that there's that feeling of, look at Northwestern, look at the types of people who went there. Every time you show Doug, I think that helps. I mean, I think Doug is so respected.
The first game, in the last minute of the first game, the Vandy game, and then right afterward, I mean, I thought that was... TV can be annoying, but it was very compelling. He's clearly incredibly nervous, and then in tears, which any father, watching your kid, I thought that was awesome.
I do too. I think it really helped you.
Yeah,
I do.
Doug, some of those are comedic. You know, when Doug is having those reactions, it's the first time, and I was sitting about 10 feet behind Doug, and I don't have any idea of what it felt like on television for the Vandy game. But a lot of us were in tears, trust me.
Yeah.
Doug's was much more personal because this is his son.
Yeah.
By the way, how about the irony of Doug's team being the one that was sort of screwed? The one team
Illinois
that didn't make it, the case of Illinois State.
By the way, when the kid at Vanderbilt makes the foul, you understand score and time. What did you do? What did you think? I looked at the set and said, oh, my God.
My brother looked at me and asked the pictures in the Chicago Sun-Times, I think it was on Friday morning. He just looked at me like, what did the kid do? And I said, he thought they were down one. That's it. He thought they were down one. And his coach is screaming. He was screaming and pointing at our point guard. And I guess he was saying guard him tighter or pressure him or whatever. But the kid reacted to the coach. Kid also reacted to his coach screaming and pointing at the Northwestern player. And these are nerve-wracking moments. This is nerve-wracking for Vanderbilt, too. These are two schools that don't have any history of success in this thing. And it's so much pressure. It's so much pressure. We've seen Georgetown players and Michigan players react in these pressure situations in adverse ways. So it ain't just Northwestern and Vanderbilt, but it was in this case.
By the way, your point guard's great. He's great. He's a great college point guard.
Terrific.
You like the Gonzaga kid better than your own point guard?
Tony, the Gonzaga kid is going to the NBA, and I was talking about all year long. He led a team to 32-1. I love BMAC. I love him. I mean, I know my kids. I was fortunate. Chris invited me to have breakfast with the team on the morning of that Vanderbilt game. I know these kids. I appreciate them. You know how if we're to be represented by that group of people, I sound like some typical sappy alum right now. We don't have a single kid in there who's not 24-karat gold, and BMAC leads it. So I love him. But in terms of what we were looking at the beginning of this season in college basketball, Nigel Williams-Goss, who's the Gonzaga kid, 32-1 he led his team to.
I'd look ahead. We got 16 teams. All power conference teams, with the exception of Gonzaga, which is a power team and has been a contender for 20 years.
Absolutely.
Right. So you got big boys now. Even Xavier, that's the Big East. These are big boys.
Now, there are two teams and two people that impressed me more than anything yesterday. Not two teams. There are a lot of teams that impressed me. Two players impressed me more than anything last night. And I would tank for them. I would tank. I would try to lose every game possible in the NBA and the rest of the season if I thought I could get in position to draft one of the two guys I'm about to mention right now, in whatever order you want to take them. Lonzo Ball, who didn't look like Jason Kidd last night. People compare him to Jason Kidd because Jason Kidd could never shoot like this. Lonzo Ball looked like nobody. He looked like a combination of Larry Bird and Magic Johnson last night.
I told you 3 months ago he's Magic Johnson.
But Tony, he hits threes. They don't hit the rim.
Yeah,
and he has an awful looking shot, and the threes go in.
They just
rip the net.
They go in.
And the other one is it Josh Jackson from Kansas?
Yes.
Okay. See, these guys are going to NBA teams next year, and those teams' fortunes are going to change instantly.
Yeah. Well, sadly, when you get Lonzo Ball, you get his dad.
Tony,
he's great.
He comes down the court, and it's like and if he's got look, I know Jalen Rose and I talked about it, and Jalen said the one trepidation he has is speed. Does this kid have any? A couple of times on fast breaks, this kid's coming down, and he makes the right pass, and it, and, And the result is always, come oh my on, God, that kid's open.
Magic Johnson was a pachyderm. It doesn't matter if you are a court genius. If you understand Bird and Magic, more than anybody in our lives, including Jordan, because Jordan had a different set of skills.
Yeah.
They were geniuses on the court. They knew where to pass the ball and where to be. You didn't have to, they're neither as fast.
And this kid, Josh Jackson.
Yeah, he's a beast.
He's spectacular.
Stay away from his car.
I think they are the next great game-changing players. And so I'm looking at, I didn't pick Kansas.
You picked UCLA.
I think UCLA showed last night when pressured what they can do. And they got Kentucky next. And I know 66% and the BPI.
That's going to be the best game.
I'll ride with the best player in that game. And the best player in that game is going to be Lonzo Ball.
All right. We'll talk to you later. Thank you.
Where am I in this pool?
You're doing very well. You're at the moment, you're in fifth. You're in fifth, which is pretty good.
Out of how many people?
Out of 24.
Okay.
That's pretty good. I'm 13th. You're fifth.
You're 13th. Well, look, you made fun of me last week when I said, give me, who was the upset?
You had Villanova going down.
I had Villanova going out. I said, give me Wisconsin. Wisconsin's a slayer. Wisconsin's a baller, baby. Going with my people in the Big Ten. And you were sniffing the ACC. How's the ACC doing
wrong
today?
ACC is terrible.
One team.
I wasn't the only one wrong on the ACC, but I was as wrong as anyone.
All year long, ACC. Duke's the best team in the country. Really?
No. Duke. I thought there were times when Duke was the
best
team.
At the time, he said.
Yeah, at the time.
But you got to project a little bit. I mean, there was just Duke couldn't defend in certain ways, and I think that kid Tatum is another kid.
He's a great player. Yeah, he's a great player.
You know, he's never going to have the impact on college basketball that Grant Hill did, because Grant Hill did it over a four-year period, and now these people come and stay a minute and a half, and you can't assess. It's hard to assess. But, wow, I mean, he's a great player. But, yeah, I'm excited. That Kentucky-UCLA game.
That's the one you want to see.
Don't ask me to leave the house. I'm in front of the TV for that one if I'm not at the game personally.
All right, I'll talk to you later. Michael Wilbon, boys and girls, we will take a break. We will come back with news. Nigel will do the news. I am Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Hey, it's Tony Kornheiser. I found the best way for you to buy travel. It's Upside.com. Here's why I love them and why everyone I tell about them loves them as well. At Upside, you save money on travel and get a free Amazon gift card worth $100, $200, even $300 every time. You get savings and a big gift card free, and here's how they do it. Upside bundles your flights and hotel together for one low price. Bundling saves a ton of money, especially on business travel, so they give you an Amazon gift card. Your company saves money, and you still keep all your miles. And right now, when you use my name, Tony, you are guaranteed a free $200 Amazon gift card your first time. My name, Tony, gets you a guaranteed $200 Amazon gift card. How can you not do that? Upside. Save big on travel and get a big gift card every time. Upside.com. That is Upside.com. Minimum purchase applies. See site for details.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
All the way from Jerusalem. And that's a long way. This is Aaron Lieber. The band is called Behind the Sun. The song is called Professionals. Michael, if people want to send in their music for us to play, how do they do it?
They can email jingles at tonykornheisershow.com.
A couple of plugs here. One is, well, at least one plug, trivia night tonight at Chad's.
All right. 7:30,
we had a pretty good
early.
Yeah,
get early.
Oh, we had a pretty good weekend. I mean, people were there. Gary Williams did a great job on Thursday night, even though Maryland lost. Gary stayed hours and hours and hours. And we packed the place Thursday night.
There was a great lunch crowd Thursday.
Yeah, so that's gone now because this is the big weekend of the tournament. But
it's great TVs.
The TVs are really good.
The TVs really are great.
And by the way, if you want the sound up, say to the bartender, I want the sound up. That's how you do it.
Change the channel the same
way. I walked
way.
In there like and I control. Said, why is there no sound?
If you want to watch women's tennis, just ask for that as
no,
well.
No, we got rid of that.
I watched Masterpiece Theater in there on Wednesday.
That is
wonderful.
Complete,
turn it up.
Complete lizard.
Turn it up. I can't hear the British accents.
Do you guys have the Hallmark channel in here?
I started two Hallmark movies this weekend.
Why?
Started.
It's tough
it's
to finish.
It's the same movie.
They're all the same.
There's
ice skating
movie.
There's a gazebo. Yeah, they're all the same.
Yeah.
There was a gazebo. It was a park bench.
Why did you do that? That's the beginning
of
hell.
I'm now interested. And after watching basketball all day, I wanted to watch 10 minutes of this nonsense.
It's just dreadful.
Liz turned the channel.
Yeah, what? Good.
Yeah. Against my
Liz has good go.
Protestations.
So. All right, Nigel, you have news.
Yes, today's newscast is brought to us by the Glover Park Whole Foods, where their motto, as always, is sorry about the rats.
Yeah.
Yes, you might have heard about them closing down a couple of weeks ago because of a rodent infestation.
This is where you live.
This is where I live. Yes, yeah. I'm the Pope of Glover Park.
Yes.
And this is very upsetting. As we walk by on Thursday.
I teach you to go to a Whole Foods.
They had barriers up, and they said we're closed for remodeling.
What?
Now, if by remodeling you mean
yeah.
we have to get rid of all the insects,
we're going to have to knock
rodents.
It down and yeah. get rid of
this
the rats.
This is good for property value in
there
the area,
There is
right?
not one word on any of the banners up there that say, sorry about the rats.
I go to the refugee Safeway, where the motto in Russian is no expectations.
Yeah.
You know, we may have food
Low
today,
bar,
and we may not have food today. And I learned to live with that. But you go to a fancy place.
I don't
and
go,
now,
I don't
you,
go there all the time.
If you live and anywhere the near there, as a Georgetown grad and resident for a while, you live anywhere near there, all the way up there on Wisconsin Avenue, that there's just, that's the rats from Potomac, the Potomac
yeah.
River are everywhere.
Yeah,
in
really
Georgetown,
is.
You'd go out in the middle of the day
yeah.
and you'd see a rat as big as your face. Like they're
it's,
everywhere.
It's not the cute Ratatouille animated rat.
He's not no. baking or
no,
cooking.
No, no, he's looking at you and sizing you up.
Yes.
So what they've done for the regular patrons of Whole Foods is
they've given them a coupon code to go somewhere else?
No, they've cordoned off an area where they can just stand and be pretentious. And
okay.
Be
well, that sounds nice. Right. That sounds lovely,
there
actually.
There you go. Let's talk a little bit about the local teams. The Wizards.
How they doing? Didn't they lose a bunch of games recently?
Well, they've lost three of the last four.
Yeah.
After a great road trip, they went four out of five on the road, including two overtimes.
They've given
them back. And a loss to the Hornets on Saturday night. They're now four games back from the Cavaliers for first place in the East.
I thought they'd catch and pass the Cavaliers. Cavaliers, they're not even playing.
They didn't play anybody the other night.
Not even playing. There is a scandal in the NBA.
Yes.
And I've been on this for years. And now finally somebody is
living, breathing commissioner.
Yeah, if there was a living, breathing commissioner, he would say to the
Thought
teams that,
was that you.
Sit everybody, hey, we're not going to have this anymore. You guys make too much money, and you put our league in jeopardy.
It's Popovich,
this is garbage.
Man.
It starts with Popovich, and now it's Kerr, and Tyronn Lue doesn't coach. He's not the coach.
T-Lue.
LeBron James is the coach and the general manager, and you pay a lot of money for this ticket. All right, and these are nationally televised games on ESPN, and a big deal is made, you know, with 87 hours of pregame stuff, and then you go and you watch who's on the floor, and the answer is nobody is on the floor. And if there was a living, breathing commissioner, the least he could do is stand up and say, we're not going to have this again. We're going to stop this. And he hasn't.
Well, the Cavs played last night.
Golden State did it.
And Love, James, and Irving, did you see this? They combined for 101. Irving, 46. LeBron, 34.
How many they combined for the night before?
How about the night before?
Zero.
Oh, that's zero. Zero.
Well, they were well rested.
They lost by 30 in a Saturday night. In a Saturday night prime time game.
Paying a lot of money. You paid a lot of money for these seats.
The Wizards are just a game and a half back of the Celtics
for
second
tonight.
Place, and they play tonight.
It's a big game.
In Boston. Now, they played three times this year.
Turn up the sound on the TV.
Yes, turn up that sound. They've beaten them handily
in Washington,
but they lost by about 9 points in Boston. No love lost between these two teams. Do you think the Wizards win this game tonight?
Yeah, I do.
Well, this is the last shot at the two seed for the Wizards.
I mean,
they win this one, it's over, and then they're playing for the three or try to hang on, I guess, for the four. I mean, there's a big difference between three and four, obviously.
Yeah, because one, you get Cleveland in the second.
Yeah, and two matters because of the reason Nigel highlighted there. I mean,
home field.
They're obviously better at
home.
What
else you got?
Well, good news, bad news for the Washington Capitals. Good news is they've clinched a playoff spot.
Okay.
Bad news is
that means the playoffs are coming.
Bad news is the playoffs are coming, and soon they'll be on the golf course. Bad news is they no longer have the most points in the league. They're tied for the most points in the league with Columbus, the Columbus Crew.
Blue Jackets.
Yeah, but do you remember...
Crew is MLS.
Yes, I'm sorry.
Do you remember when the Columbus Blue Jackets came to Washington about a month ago?
Got served.
And lost 87-1.
They had won at that point like 19 in a row or something.
Yes.
And they got killed.
They got killed.
So nobody's worried about Columbus.
Well, there's another team who is just behind those two.
Who?
Little team called Pittsburgh.
That's the team you
worry. That might
be
problematic.
But there's some weird
99 points to them.
There's
Caps beat them a lot.
There's some weird season thing. I was listening to friend of the show Neil Greenberg this weekend at 8 a.m. on a radio station doing his radio show about hockey. I know, don't ask. And there's this weird thing that like the Caps potentially could play the Penguins in the first round
Oh, gosh.
Because
really?
Of the way the conferences shakeout. Yeah,
I don't think you want to do that.
That would be bad.
I don't think either team wants
no,
to.
You
know,
no, that. I mean, I just, I don't think strange.
All right, what else?
Chicago also, by the way, with 99 points. Mm. So a lot of teams vying for that vaunted Bulls. President's Cup.
Who won the golf tournament? Michael, you watched the golf. Who won the golf tournament?
Mark Leishman.
And he's Rory, Australian?
Yes, he had an eagle on the par 5 16th that got him into the lead. Rory McIlroy made a big push, but his putting came back to plague him a little bit with a missed putt on 17 and then a uncharacteristic three putt.
You don't think he's a great putter?
I think putting is what plagues him. He has the same sweeping motion throughout his entire golf game. It's why that big left miss of his is still sometimes in play. If you look at the driver, he's contained that miss, but there's still a little bit of that sweep in his putting stroke. For a couple of years, he had that Dave Stockton very strong forward press where he looked like almost like a block moving through the hit zone. He's moved away from that. He is back with a more face-stable Scotty Cameron, but putting is still a little bit of his weakness.
I mean, I got nothing.
You got nothing.
I barely understood anything there.
I'm pretty sure Michael just stole my notes on that.
Face stable Scotty Cameron was the name of a band I formed.
Yeah. I know. I know you were watching. Roger Federer won the Indian Wells.
He beat
record fifth time.
He beat Stan
Wawrinka.
Countryman Wawrinka, yeah.
Yes. No, I wasn't watching
that. It continues the comeback for Federer.
I wasn't watching.
Yes, there you go. I wasn't watching. Some tough news from the world of football.
Yeah.
49ers great Dwight Clark has announced that he has ALS, otherwise known as Lou Gehrig's disease.
He's pretty old for a diagnosis. He's 60. I think it's usually a little bit younger than that, but I don't know.
Well, I'll look it up.
What he is saying is that his is progressing more slowly than sometimes this disease progresses. The disease kills you.
Yes.
There is no cure.
Yes. So
there is no cure.
Most people, this is just another thing for me to worry about. Most people who develop ALS are between the ages of 40 and 70, sort of a wide range, with the average age of 55 at the time of diagnosis. So he is a little bit older.
That's what I thought, because he's 60 now. Now, he is saying he's wondering if football had something to do with this. I don't know that in the literature of ALS we've ever seen anything like that.
It's not
the hits to the head.
I don't think it's a brain disease.
I don't think it's a traumatic. Right? I don't think it's trauma from hitting, but I mean, certainly Dwight Clark is entitled to say that, and certainly the league will look into that because this is Dwight Clark. It's a very sad thing. There's a documentary out called Gleason about Steve Gleason, who suffers from ALS, who was a member of the New Orleans Saints for a while.
Right.
And it is, according to people who have seen it, it is one of the greatest, most uplifting, and you wouldn't think so, greatest, most uplifting documentaries ever made. I mean, people rave about this. I have not seen it, so I can't vouch for it.
Maryland women out in the second round last year in the tournament. Not so this year. They advance 83-56 against West Virginia.
Did you see the girl make a three-quarter court shot?
Three-quarter court shot.
Took it with
two hands over her head and threw it like you'd throw a volleyball.
Yeah.
You know, or a corner kick in soccer.
So you do that,
Steph. 6,000 people.
Actually, corner kick in soccer, you would use your foot.
Oh, well, whatever.
But a throw-in.
Yeah. I don't know anything about soccer.
We'll get to Liverpool Man City later.
But oh, yes, it's in the second hour.
That's a home game at College Park.
They play Duke, Oregon winner.
But they go to Bridgeport. Does that mean they have to play Connecticut?
Yes, they do.
I mean, that's just a buzzsaw.
If they beat Duke, Oregon winner.
Again, I'm going to repeat myself from the other day. I don't do a lot about women's basketball. And, you know, other than Connecticut, I don't really care about it. Like most people, but I will tell you that Maryland, in my opinion, you're 30-2. You won your league outright, league. You won your conference outright in the tournament. You're 30-2, and one of your losses is to Connecticut by 6. How you are not a 2 seed is beyond me.
The idea of being in Connecticut's brackets. I mean, they got a chance, you want to avoid,
but they've got a chance. They would get Connecticut in the regional final, and they would have a chance. And if they were to do that, that's the headline for the next day.
Absolutely.
The big headline. All right, so that's it?
Yeah, sure.
But did you have anything else?
Well, just a story about the women's hockey, Michael and Strike.
Do that tomorrow.
Yes.
So we're going to have Old Guy Radio now. I'm going to talk in Old Guy Radio. There are two deaths this weekend.
Death Radio.
Chuck Berry, it'll be Death Star Radio. Chuck Berry and Jimmy Breslin, these are very big people in my life. So I'm going to talk for a little while about that. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the MeUndies read. Elevate your underwear game to the next level with MeUndies. You've perfected your wardrobe, but what about the stuff not everybody gets to see? If you've been settling for store-bought underwear 5-packs, I have something that will change your life for the better. and that's MeUndies. What's the first thing you put on, the last thing you take off? It's your underwear. Make your most important piece of clothing the best it can be with MeUndies. MeUndies are designed in Los Angeles. They're made from sustainably sourced micro-modal, a fabric three times softer than cotton. MeUndies softer than soft luxe undies, coming in ever-changing selection of classic colors, bold shades, and adventurous patterns, so you can tailor your undies to your own personal style. Michael, tell us about the adventurous patterns.
Well, I actually received the spring MeUndies, and these underpants would go into the bold category. So these are not as adventurous as the Valentine's Day MeUndies I received.
Right.
The good news is, I think I have enough MeUndies to share with Gary, Nigel, and Chris.
Like a worn pair or a new pair?
I'd like my own pair.
Yeah, game used? Well,
I'll clean them before I hand them
out. Oh, that sounds great. Right. Yeah.
Guess what? Gary, you save time and money each month with a monthly subscription. And if you're not ready for a subscription, that's okay. You can still save. And that's because MeUndies is offering you 20% off your first pair. Just use our special URL, MeUndies.com/TonyK. Get 20% off your first pair. So go ahead and revamp your underwear drawer. You deserve it. Once again, that is MeUndies.com/TonyK. MeUndies, MeUndies.com/TonyK.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
They're really rocking and rolling. You didn't think that we were going to let Chuck Berry pass and not do songs all week long. Chuck Berry, dead at 90 years old. Critical commentary goes like this, and there are great obituaries written all over the country about Chuck Berry. You talk in terms of Mount Rushmore, which limits to four people. And in the beginning of rock and roll in the United States of America, the people that you would think would be on Mount Rushmore include the following people. Chuck Berry, obviously. Elvis Presley, obviously. Little Richard, Buddy Holly, Sam Cooke, the Everly Brothers, Jerry Lee Lewis, or any of those. It's fine. You can put anybody you want on as long as Elvis and Chuck Berry are on. Beyond that, and it's not that I'm not a fan of Elvis. I understand what Elvis did. Elvis was a Southern white kid who sang black music and was able to put into the mainstream of America a type of music that had only been heard before in very limited number, okay? Elvis Presley did that. Elvis Presley was the bridge. Elvis Presley is extraordinarily important, and Elvis Presley was extraordinarily talented as a singer. He was a great singer, natural soul singer, Elvis Presley. He ain't Chuck Berry to me. Chuck Berry to me is the most important person in rock and roll. He's it. He's the alpha. Him with the guitar, with the duck walk, writing his own music, having the understanding of what the beat is in a different way than Elvis Presley did. I'm gonna quote a little bit from an obit today in which it said that ultimately Berry was teaching America's post-war babies how to best live in a democracy. You had choices. Having no particular place to go, which is one of the refrains in his music, meant you could go anywhere. He wrote car songs. I mean, then Brian Wilson started writing car songs and other people. But the greatest songs in the entire Bruce Springsteen catalog are always car songs. They always are. It's the understanding of what it's the intuitive understanding of what America is, that America is a place where you get in a car and you go someplace. It's not Europe. It's not South America. It's not that. It's no. We're a country with post-war money and post-war expansion. And in the late 1940s and the 1950s and the 1960s, you got in a car and you went someplace. And there was infinite possibility when you got in a car and you went someplace. And Chuck Berry got that. He totally got that. The entire essence of his music is that same driving beat all the time. These are not slow songs. These are not melancholy. This is not Paul Simon. This is a different person. Paul Simon is great. This is a different kind of greatness. To me, there's no rock and roll in America without Chuck Berry. So I'll end the Chuck Berry part there if anybody wants to comment on Chuck Berry, because I'm going to now go into a loss that is more personal to me. And that is Jimmy Breslin. Chuck Berry, by the way, lived to be 90 years old and was playing into his 80s.
Yes.
Jimmy Breslin died yesterday. Jimmy Breslin was the person I wanted to be. And you're going to say, oh, well, was Jimmy Breslin on TV? Was Jimmy Breslin on radio? Jimmy Breslin do a podcast? Jimmy Breslin never heard a podcast. Okay. I was very fortunate, very happy, very grateful that TV and radio fell in my lap. I didn't study for those things. I wanted to be a newspaper guy. And what I really wanted to be was a big city pavement walking newspaper columnist. If you grew up in Chicago, that might have been Mike Royko or Bob Green. If you grew up in New York, it was Jimmy Breslin or Pete Hamill. Whatever other cities you grew up in, there's your guy. Whoever your guy is, I get that part. That's what I wanted to be. I wasn't good enough to do that. I wasn't ambitious enough to do that. I wasn't tough enough to do that. I'm okay. I was good. I was a good sports writer. I was a pretty good sports writer. There's some better, but there were a lot worse. You know, I did all right, but I couldn't be what I wanted to be, which was Jimmy Breslin, the guy who was the conscience of a readership. Now, they don't have newspapers anymore. They got them, but they're not the same. You know, now anybody has access to being a news. You don't need a particular credential. You can write from wherever you want to write, and you can have all the strong opinions you want, and there's a very, very limited ways to filter out who's good and who's bad. I mean, you have your own personal choice as to who's good or who's bad, but when you were a big city columnist in the 1940s and 50s and 60s and 70s, you were at the top of the ziggurat because you had earned it. It just didn't happen. You just didn't start on Tuesday, and by Thursday, you got that job. That's not how it worked. There was a long apprenticeship involved. Jimmy Breslin didn't start out as a sports writer, but he wrote this great book about the Mets called Can't Anybody Here Play This Game? he wrote a great novel called World Without End, Amen, which was absolutely great. He had a lot of his stuff translated into screenplays here and there. And when I use the line about the woman to whom I'm related by marriage, that's a steal from Jimmy Breslin. Jimmy Breslin used that all the time. When he referred to his first wife, Jimmy Breslin came from the borough of Queens, where he was a Sharpie, and he went into the borough of Manhattan, where he worked corner to corner. Just a great writer. He referred to his first wife as the former Rosemary DiTalico. He always did that. Always first name, last name, stuff like that. He had tics in his writing that I idolized. I mean, and I'm not the only one. Very good friends of mine, like at the time, Mike Lupica and David Israel. And I called David last night. I called Mitch Albom last night. I left messages. I left a message for Mitch. I said, Jimmy died. Yeah, because I knew it would be a very meaningful thing. And I didn't, not only didn't I know him well, I barely knew him. David Israel knew him well. Mike Lupica knew him well. I didn't, but I was absolutely in his orbit. I mean, I revered everything that he did. I'm going to read from an obit today. Jimmy Breslin died at 88. This by Paul Dugan, who I don't know. Jimmy Breslin, long the gruff and rumpled king, a streetwise newspaper columnist in New York, a Pulitzer Prize winner whose muscular, unadorned prose pummeled the venal, deflated the pompous, and gave voice to ordinary city dwellers for decades, died March 19th in his home in Manhattan. He was 88. It's a pretty good first paragraph. He called himself an unlettered bum, and he left an estimable legacy of published work, including 16 books, 7 of them novels, plus 2 anthologies of his columns. What set him apart as a writer was the inimitable style of his journalism across the last great decades of ink on paper news in the 1960s for the old New York Herald Tribune and later for the Daily News and the city pages of Long Island-based Newsday, where his final regular column appeared in 2004. I'll just read a little bit more and then I'll get to what he did. Like Damon Runyon and other renowned Gotham storytellers before him, Mr. Breslin delighted in the idioms and eccentricities of New York street life, the patois of the lower precincts, was his native tongue. He came from a sooty neighborhood in Queens and took stock of events from the bottom up, always from the slant of the small fry. You climb the stairs, Mr. Breslin said when he was 72 and still a shoe leather reporter, and all the stories are at the top of the stairs. He was sort of the classic. Most of the great city side columnists that I revered were ethnics. Jimmy Breslin was Irish. Pete Hamill was Irish. That was the great gift of Irish writers in New York. Mike Royko was Eastern European. They were all liberal, but not in the OU liberal sense. They didn't want sweeping change. It's not what they did. That's not how they focused. How they focused was they took the plight of one person and said, this ain't right. This ain't right. If a guy didn't have a house worth having, if he lived in a terrible apartment in a terrible section of town and he was working hard, Jimmy Breslin would find him and write about him. And he'd say, this isn't right. If a woman was working the same job as a man and not getting the same amount of money and the same amount of respect, Jimmy Breslin would focus on that and say, this isn't right. It wasn't like we have to change the world in massive Franklin Delano Roosevelt terms. And we got to change the life of this person, because change the life of this person, you change the life of all people. Jimmy, and it wasn't, he didn't hate the rich. I mean, if somebody rich got screwed on a gas bill,
for example, I mean,
Jimmy
Breslin
would write, "This isn't right, and here's why it isn't right." And Jimmy Breslin, he was accused many times of making things up. Did he make things up? Maybe he did. But I used to work at the New York Times with a guy named Paul Montgomery, who covered things with Jimmy Breslin, who covered freedom marches with Jimmy Breslin, who went to Selma with Jimmy Breslin. And he would say of Jimmy Breslin that maybe that quote wasn't exactly right. But Jimmy Breslin got the essence of the truth better than anybody. So while I'm not going to defend making stuff up, and I can tell you, I've worked with people, worked with them, and known them well. Great and honored people in my profession who I know make stuff up. I know they do that. So is it a sin? It is a sin. But I was always struck by what Paul said. And he covered against him. He covered against him. And he said Breslin got it right more than anybody. I have a few. Well, I have this one story that I did mean to say this, that at the end, and he was just a great writer. It's great that he won the Pulitzer Prize. A dear friend of Dick Schaap's, for example. When Dick died in 2001, after checking into a New York City hospital of great renown for a hip replacement, and the next thing you know, he had diseases running through his body and had to be put into a coma, and they tried to save his life by essentially putting him on ice for quite some long period of time. When he died at the great service, Jimmy Breslin stood up and called the doctors the defendants. And he said Dick was killed, and he wanted them brought to trial. And they were great friends. When Jimmy quit, nobody even knew he quit. The last line of his last column was, "Thanks for the use of the hall." And he just disappeared, and that was it, and he didn't write anymore. He ran for vice mayor, deputy mayor of the city, along with Norman Mailer in the late 60s. And Jimmy was a big star. I mean, Jimmy was that, you know, gumshoe reporter, writer who made himself a big star. Son of Sam, he got involved in the whole Son of Sam things in the 70s. And I mean, I was saying to somebody last night, what is the difference between Jimmy Breslin and a cop? Cop carries a gun and Jimmy Breslin carried a notebook. I mean, they were out there doing the same thing in the streets of New York. It is said in the obit that Jimmy found the guy who dug Robert Kennedy's grave.
I heard that on NPR or John F. Kennedy's grave.
Whichever. I mean, that was spent
like the day with him.
That's what Jimmy Breslin would do. That's what he would do. He would ride the train with the Robert Kennedy body, that the train that went from New York to Washington or the other way, and he would write about everybody who was on the train. And I mean, I thought he was great, and I wished I was good enough to have done what he did. Those people, they don't exist anymore. That job doesn't exist anymore. That sort of one-man band crusader.
No
that,
time. Need it quick.
You don't do it. You need clicks. It doesn't exist.
And to the I was thinking about this. So you're talking that that has been replaced in many ways by the exact opposite. So Jimmy Breslin, those folks were Royko. Those folks were 1 inch from the ground.
They worked.
Right?
Their feet were there.
They've been replaced by the, and this isn't bad.
People
it's just different.
From the
Tom Friedman.
Yeah,
Tom Friedman, like what's happening in Kuala Lumpur and what it means. You know, like the like 50,000 feet as opposed to 5 feet.
Jimmy Breslin would literally go down into the sewers of Manhattan to do a column. I mean, that's what he did. I barely knew him. People who knew him well, he would make calls. He would make calls to his friends, and it would be all you would hear is, "Hey, what's doing?" And then Jimmy expects you to tell him everything that you had seen in the last 24 hours, and you did, because he was that great. The one story that I have, and I cannot emphasize enough how much I adored him and wanted to be him. And I was working at Newsday in the early 1970s, and Jimmy took a job at Newsday in the early 1970s, and he did it because his dear friend Don Forst was one of the three managing editors at Newsday, and he convinced Breslin, who didn't drive. Breslin never drove. I mean, guys who grew up in New York.
Talk about a New York City life.
They didn't drive. So Jimmy would have to take the train out to Long Island to work on Long Island if he came out there. Most of the time he worked in his house. I think he had an apartment in Manhattan. He had Forest Hills or something like that. And a total stone-cold gambler, by the way, Jimmy. You know, like basketball and football and stuff like that. All the greats. Royko.
Dude was born in New York City in 1926 or whatever. Of course he's going to. be throwing dice.
So, yeah, he didn't drive, and so he would have to wait at a bus. He'd have to stand at the bus stop and wait for the bus. Jimmy Breslin shouldn't have to wait for the bus. I mean, I wanted to give him a ride. I didn't know him then. I met him later in life, but I wanted to give him a ride. I was embarrassed to go up to him. I was embarrassed to say, Mr. Breslin, can I just give you a ride? He's just like the greatest writer I've ever seen in this particular style. So one time in the early 1970s, and Jimmy is not working then. Jimmy's working for the New York Post then. He's not working at Newsday. And I'm covering the holiday festival in Madison Square Garden. There's a college basketball tournament of 8 or 10 or 12 teams or something like that during Christmas week. And it's a big assignment for me. I'm a kid. I mean, I'm really happy. I'm going to go to Madison Square Garden 4 straight days. It's really exciting for me. I'm going to type out stories. I'm not a columnist. I'm a reporter at that point. I'm covering the games. And there's a 10 o'clock game. And I don't know why there's a lot of games, and one of them starts at 10. And this particular 10 o'clock game features Stanford. Stanford at the time has a 7-foot center named Rich Kelly, who's a pretty good college basketball player, may have played 2 or 3 years in the NBA. And Jimmy Breslin walks into the there aren't 1,000 people in Madison Square Garden at 10 o'clock in the morning for a college basketball game Christmas week.
I like how they have the West Coast team playing the 10 a.m.
Exactly. Yeah, that wasn't as big a deal then.
Stanford. I later find out that this guy, Rich Kelly, is Breslin's nephew. Now, I don't know. I didn't know this at the time. And I see Breslin walking up the stairs from the floor to where the media row is. And Breslin is wearing – and Breslin always wore suits – and Breslin is wearing a suit that he slept in the last 3 nights. This suit cannot be cleaned, cannot be pressed.
Like a Bob Huggins type situation?
It's not possible.
That's Junior's footwell.
It's a very, very expensive suit. And in those days, that might have been a $500 suit. That might have been. And Jimmy Breslin is wearing that, and he's wearing a white shirt, and he's got a tie. The tie is askew. And I have no idea where he's coming from. And I go, oh, my God. It's Jimmy Breslin. What's he doing here? What's he doing here? And there's a seat close to me. The seat next to me is open. A couple of seats down is open. And Breslin sits down. I mean, I can't move. This is Jimmy Breslin, and I don't know what to say. And I'm really not going to say anything. And he looks at me. He says, hey, kid, you got a pen? Now, at that period of time, people that know me well know that I am one of the most anal retentive people in the history of the world. I have color-coded everything. Mm. Everything is very, very neat. I know where everything is all the time. And I have... attached to my little notebook, I have a red pen and a blue pen and a green pen. These are all felt tip pens. These are the pens that I use. I underline in different colors for different things. This is the system that I have. I don't expect anybody else to have a system. And I've got these pens. And Jimmy Breslin says, hey, kid, you got a pen? And I give him one of my felt tip pens. And he looks and he goes, what's this? And then he uses a word that I can't use on this particular quality podcast.
Expletive deleted.
And I go, it's a felt tip pen. And he goes, kid, you'll never go anywhere in this business if you don't use a Bic. Anybody got a Bic? Somebody hands Jimmy Breslin a Bic pen. That's my only Jimmy Breslin story.
And man, you'll was he right.
You'll never go anywhere in this business don't use a Bic. Bic pens are like garbage. They bleed all over your hands.
You opened your laptop and ignored that old man.
Didn't have. There was no laptop. And that was my Jimmy Breslin story. I just absolutely adored him. I would commend to you, I clipped Breslin's columns. I have them at home. I got Breslin. I got Hamill. I got them. They're in drawers somewhere, or they're
color-coded.
In suitcases somewhere, and they're underlined. I used to tape them to my wall when I was 13 and 14 years old. I mean, underneath the pictures of Roy Campanella and Sandy Koufax and Frank Gifford, there'd be Breslin columns and there'd be Hamill columns. I mean, he was that good. If I could have been half that good, I'd have been thrilled. I mean, that's how much I thought of him. And it pleases me no end for him to have said to me, you'll never go anywhere in this business if you don't use a Bic. I thought that was great. He was fantastic. Go find his work. He wrote like I won't say he wrote like nobody, because a lot of people wrote like him. Mike Barnicle, one of the last great Cityside columnists, wrote like Jimmy Breslin. Yeah. But nobody wrote as well as Jimmy Breslin. Nobody wrote as well as Jimmy Breslin.
I wanted to share this with you about Chuck Berry. This has been making the rounds. Dear Chuck, this is from October 1986.
Dear Chuck Berry, when they tell you music will live forever, you can usually be sure they're exaggerating. But Johnny B. Goode is on Voyager interstellar records attached to NASA's Voyager spacecraft, now 2 billion miles from Earth and bound for the stars. These records will last a billion years or more. Happy 60th birthday with our admiration for the music you have given to this world. Go, Johnny, go. Sincerely, Carl Sagan.
So it's, you know, this
something
is a,
like that.
A tough weekend for me.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
Chuck Berry and Jimmy Breslin were,
you know,
really
born with different years. Chuck Berry born in 1926, Breslin in 28, but within a day of each other, the 17th and 18th of October, respectively, and then died within a day of each other.
Go, everybody knows Chuck Berry's music. Go read Jimmy Breslin's columns. We'll get out of here. We'll have mailbag when we return. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
An undisclosed location. Yeah, yeah. Next door house that's vacant.
I can hear long before it's light. Yeah. So you'll never guess it is right. Here's a P.O. box, but no street address. You know I want your tribute, just not your presence. Third floor room, 10 and Chevy Chase. But I ain't. Time for your face, don't miss it. No, 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 don't miss it. Cause if you guess it, I won't be present. I'll be gone.
Nice.
Long gone.
Jason Fuse. With assists from Kirsten Ohnstadt, Patrick Moffitt, John Fitzpatrick, Steve Lipton, and Robert Berg in the background.
It's well done.
It's
very nice.
Well done. It's better than well done. Before we get into the mailbag, I'd like to say thanks to Michael Wilbon for coming on with us all the way from Arizona. I'd also like to thank our sponsors today, Upside.com, Books, and MeUndies. Please support them the way they support our podcast. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of The Tony Kornheiser Show wherever you listen to podcasts, including iTunes, Spotify, and Google Play. And if you listen to the show through iTunes, please leave us a review. Fortunately, we have a lot of Chuck Berry stuff here. Brendan Steenberger in Columbia, Missouri. When you grow up around greatness, you tend to take it for granted. In St. Louis, Chuck Berry is an institution, so much so that you forget that he wouldn't be around forever. Anybody from St. Louis knew that at almost any time, you could go get a beer at Blueberry Hill on the Del Mar Loop and have a good shot at seeing Chuck Berry. He stopped performing there around 2014, but he was in good health and it always felt like he might come back at any time. I consider myself lucky to have gotten to see the legend, and I bet all of the city and most of Missouri can say the same. Now that he's really gone, I feel regret that I didn't take advantage of the opportunity more. I guess I never really thought he'd leave us. In my mind, he's on Mount Rushmore, and my ding-a-ling never happened. The worst song he ever did. Be good, Chuck. From Andy Bothwell in Minneapolis, Minnesota. You have often spoken on the show about how Chuck Berry was still performing regularly in St. Louis well into his advanced age. I myself am a touring musician. Whenever my tours stop in St. Louis, I usually play the Duck Room at Blueberry Hill, the same room Mr. Berry used to play on a monthly basis. Though he plays to much larger crowds than I do, my favorite thing I ever heard about Chuck Berry from the staff is that he played at the same time every month, and every month he pulled up to the back door 2 minutes before his set started. No sound check, no practice, nothing. The band, the sold-out crowd, and the staff ready and waiting for the man to arrive, and he was always there 2 minutes ahead of schedule, allowing him just enough time to walk in the back door through the green room and hit the stage, to then absolutely nail the show every night. I'm 35 years old, trailing on the outward edge of being a millennial, and still I, as a musician and a music fan, am in awe of what the man did till his dying day. Thank you for regularly playing his songs and keeping his music alive for Uber riding, tasting menu enjoying, latte ordering millennials like me. From the great Ed Butt, one of my favorite movie lines is, "Give me a blues riff and B, watch me for the changes and try to keep up." Hit it. Chuck, it's your cousin Marv. Chuck Berry, the face of Mount Rushmore. From Dave Ballard in Hampton, Maine. As we celebrate the life of Chuck Berry, I thought I would retell my brush with Mr. Berry that didn't make the cut before in the meeting of a celebrity segment a few years ago. My band was playing at an airport hotel lounge when the manager came in and asked if we would mind if Chuck Berry sat in with us. Of course, we were thrilled. During our break, we wandered into the lobby just as Chuck Berry was getting off the elevator. He talked with us for a few brief moments and assured us he'd be down to play a few tunes with us as soon as he got settled in. I guess he had difficulty getting settled in as he never came down to join us. Of course, the fact that he'd already played a concert that night at the local university may have had something to do with it. It was many years ago, but the memory of talking with one of Mount Rushmore legends of rock and roll remains a great thrill. Sneaky Short Apparently he's sneaky short. Hmm. Thank you for letting me share my story. Nick Ferranti writes, I hope this, dear Starbucks, I hope this email finds you well. I'm reaching out to alert you to a customer service issue of perhaps infinitesimal importance. This morning, a contributor of the famous Tony Kornheiser Show placed an order on their Starbucks app. Due to weather conditions, when this contributor arrived at his local Starbucks to pick up the order, the store was closed. This contributor is not confrontational and is reluctant to broach this issue on his own. I, however, feel passionately that redress is in order. For one, in the future, would it be possible to prohibit such mobile app orders when stores are closed so as to limit such confusion? Furthermore, and more pressingly, would it be possible to comp this loyal customer a venti breakfast tea and a pastry of his choosing? Please advise. From John in Oregon. This is the John's email. Your recent crusade against the Hallmark Channel has really struck a chord with me. As a millennial little, I, of course, have roommates. One of them happens to be my 62-year-old mother-in-law. While we have a robust cable package, the only channel she's able to find is the Hallmark Channel. That would be bad enough on its own, but given that she is hard of hearing, she typically puts it on in her bedroom and the kitchen at full volume and at the same time. The result is the ever-present dialogue of a lonely middle-aged woman and a handsome new guy in town flirting, getting together, splitting up, and then reuniting when they realize it was all a misunderstanding. Don't even get me started on the 4 months a year the failing programmers give us wall-to-wall Christmas movies that are totally indistinguishable from another. One from another. Sad. With your platform in reach, we can wipe this scourge from our televisions and make America great again, bigly.
Hashtag MAGA.
From Ben Goldstein Smith in Davenport Street in Washington, D.C. I'm a millennial little. I just walked into the living room to find the woman to whom I will be related by marriage this July, invitation forthcoming, watching the Hallmark Channel. My face immediately went blank as I muttered, oh no. She asked what was wrong, and I explained how the angry old podcaster up the road has been ranting about the Hallmark Channel, signifying the beginning of the end. Well, I didn't expect it this soon, but I'm 27 and I guess it's over. I'll see you at the early bird at Chad's. If you're out on your bike, kind everyone, as always, do wear white.
Jesus, am I speaking Chinese?